Today on Maine Calling, craft artists in Maine. From wooden boats and furniture to pottery and textiles, Wabanaki baskets to contemporary metalworks, Maine has a rich tradition of fine craft. The state is a hub for artisans who create functional and beautiful items from natural materials. What is it about Maine? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we discuss this question with some of those at the center of the craft movement. Among them, the executive director of the Haystack Mountain School of Crafts, which is celebrating its 75th year. We learn about the history and range of craftspeople working in Maine, what they make, and how they contribute to the fabric of our state. What does craft mean to you? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Support for Maine Calling comes from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine. Now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today, we highlight artisans who are carrying on Maine's rich craft tradition, people who turn natural materials such as clay, wood, fiber, and stone into objects that are both functional and beautiful. Joining me for the hour, Perry Price, who is executive director of the Haystack Mountain School of Crafts. Whitney Gill, a ceramic artist and executive director of the Maine Crafts Association. And Matt Hoggle, executive director of the Center for Furniture Craftsmanship. We invite you to join the conversation. Are you a collector of a particular kind of craft in Maine? Are you a craft artist yourself? Do you have questions about the movement, the hub of activity in Maine? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to all of you and welcome back, Whitney. I know that you've been on our program before during holidays to talk about gifts, but this conversation's a little different. And I want to start by kind of putting you on the spot and saying a lot of us who live in Maine think of this place as special and that craft in Maine is special. Is it, or are we just a little full of ourselves?
Well, I'm biased, but I think it is very special. And I've grown up in Maine. I was born here, and I've just fallen in love with this community of makers. I've built my life around it. So to me, it is near and dear and the only place I want to be making craft.
What is it and why? Why is it that Maine is a hub for craft artisans, Whitney?
I don't know if I can individually and completely define that. It's a great question. But Maine has incredible natural resources and it's beautiful. And I think those two factors are major contributors.
All right. Well, Perry, I'll put that question to you as well. What is it about Maine and craft?
That is an excellent question. I think that not only does Maine have its own strong craft traditions, but it's also been a site where people have come for inspiration across different arts disciplines. And so when people are looking to establish their artistic practices or when they're looking to establish a school to train others, Maine is a natural place for these types of activities to be sustained.
Okay. And Matt, you, your turn.
I would echo that. I would say that also what's been important, at least in recent history, is that Maine's citizenry has done the good work of investing in the culture and providing these opportunities, like obviously Haystack and its long history, but BFC and Maine Craft, providing places to sort of develop your skills, which is vital to sort of continuing the craft in Maine.
Whitney, it's interesting because you used a term that's kind of a contemporary term. You said makers. You said it's great to be this community in this community of makers. And it is an interesting term because I think it's a really encompasses a lot of people. Even the word craft encompasses a lot. And I've noticed that two of your organizations, have the word crafts in your title, but you don't really use the word crafts very much. And I'm thinking this is kind of a tricky word and a tricky world, right? Because you have makers, you have craftsmen, you have artists, you have everybody from somebody who might be doing something fun with their grandkids to somebody who's work is in internationally renowned museums. And I'm just wondering, I don't want to make the entire program about this, but how, Whitney, you think about the word craft. When we talk about fine craft, how do you define it? And I have a feeling you're going to say you know it when you see it, but there's no way, right?
I'd say so. Yes, true. And also, I think we do have these incredible traditions in Maine and in the United States of craftsmanship. In many ways, it was a departure from industrialism, where people really focused on making things with their hands and emphasizing the importance of that. And craft is an art form, and it's also focused on utility. It's things you can use. But then when we're working in fine craftsmanship, that could be just elevated to a beautiful object and just enjoying those traditions and stretching them in either traditional or contemporary manners.
And Sharon, Matt, you can use furniture, so there's no question there.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, craft is generally founded in objects that had a function that made life better or easier in some capacity, and continues by and large to do that. I mean, be it furniture making or pottery or weaving or textiles, I mean, they're not decorative at their core. They're functional and serving a purpose. And though obviously it's grown and expanded and changed as the world has changed and the needs have changed, the core of it.
All right. Well, Perry, the reason we're doing this program now as opposed to another time, and we have talked about craft in Maine, but particularly now, is because you are celebrating a really big anniversary, Haystack turning 75. And it's really interesting because I can imagine that 75 years ago, your founders were considered a little, I'm going to guess, radical and unusual. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, I think it was a big leap of faith and also an extremely generous idea to say that what the United States needed was a craft school and to create a place that would be a resource for artists and craftspeople and makers, you know, all of those terms that we were just discussing, to have a place to meet one another, to train with one another, and to grow. And that was a pretty radical idea, especially because what they were attempting to do was, you know, not to replicate other forms of education, not to replicate other forms of apprenticeship, but to truly create a place that was both by and for craftspeople to continue a community and to deepen their engagement with each other. And we've been very fortunate to be able to continue that spirit for 75 years, as long as there have been changes in conversations about what craft is. Haystack's been a place for those conversations to take place.
You know, I'm thinking about what I know about the 1950s, and I'm thinking about muscle cars and super highways and ranch houses. And I'm wondering if the fine craft movement was in reaction to that, or just folks who are craving something else, or really not about that at all, people just doing their own things?
Well, you touch on a couple of things that actually were very influential in the development of the contemporary craft movement in the United States starting in the mid-century. The campus that Haystack is on now on Deer Isle is a treasure of mid-century modernist architecture. And so in many ways, there is not necessarily a reaction to other forms of popular culture, but a really deep dialogue between traditional ways of making, traditional materials and traditional practices, but also new ways of thinking about how all of these things can be put into the studios and engaged with contemporary makers. So interestingly, you know, when you think of ranch houses and hot rods, modernist movement had a huge impact on the development of both aesthetics and styles in contemporary craft. And so rather than thinking of it as entirely reactionary, many of these people were engaged with really contemporary and cutting edge ways of thinking when they were engaged with crafts.
Yeah, so interesting because I think when people think of craft, many people think of maybe a beautiful bowl of pottery or an extraordinary quilt. But what you're talking about is I wouldn't say the opposite, but just a whole nother world.
I think it exists on a continuum. This isn't a field that allows individuals to engage with different disciplines and different means of making in their own unique way. And it's also been a field that has been welcoming and generative of lots of different points of views. So you can find people who come in and they want to work in very traditional historic ways, and you've got other people who want to come in and build on that for a contemporary moment and really find a place for their contemporary voice. And this is a field that allows all of those different type of practitioners to be in dialogue with one another.
Matt, I see you nodding. Same thing with the furniture craftsmen who come and study with you.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a respect for traditional forms of furniture, and there's many folks who come to our school, for example, wanting to learn to make the best, shaker style furniture that they can because they respect it and love it. And there's others who want to push forms and new and interesting directions, designs, and we support to the best of our ability both of those things because they're both tremendously important and valid ways of making and creating craft.
Whitney, for craft art, for artisans, craftspeople to survive, they need to have a market. Somebody needs to buy their work. And I'm wondering, is that growing? Are there more and more people who appreciate craft and are willing to spend more for that than they might spend for something that's mass-produced?
I think awareness continues to grow, and I think actually like having social media has contributed to artists being having more avenues to share their story, educate people about what they do in their studios. You get a closer look than you may have, a decade ago, in seeing what actually goes into making something by hand and seeing the value in it. And we really lean on institutions like the Center for Furniture Craftsmanship and Haystack to educate people about that too. We say our best customers are makers themselves because they really understand what goes into this kind of work and realizing your vision and really honing your craft. And we've actually Haystack is pretty instrumental in how MCA started too, back in 1983. It's our first program and our oldest program that we go every year in May, and we open the Haystack campus and we do a weekend with our members, and it kind of has become a family homecoming. All of this education and awareness and supporting one another has been going on for a long time.
It's so interesting that you say social media because I had not thought to talk about that. But as soon as you said it, I said, thought, of course, this is a way that people who may never have thought about craft before can get it. And do you find many craftspeople doing sort of like, oh, I don't know, going through their process and putting it in, slow motion or sped up motion. What kind of ways do you see that people are sharing what it takes to create what they do?
Different ways. Well, yeah, video. I think video has been a really important tool. I feel like, also, I will clarify, I feel like social media is an introduction to craft, and you really do need to experience it by hand. So yes, using social media, seeing videos. Also, we have a store in the West Gardner Travel Plaza you made me think of. People just unexpected. They're seeing craft in places that they wouldn't usually. And we love Maine for its destinations for craft, like Haystack and the Center for Furniture Craftsmanship, but we also love putting craft and fine craftsmanship in unexpected places where people can see and engage with it in real life.
And it's funny, Perry, I think of Haystack as a place people might escape from the world, but it also, I'm guessing, is a way that they reconnect with one another, but also, and I'm wondering how the last 10 years and the advent of social media has contributed to the lives of the people who come to you.
Yeah, it's an interesting dichotomy, because in many ways, in many people's practices are very isolated, right? Artists are working in the studio with either themselves or a very small team. And then you come to a place like Haystack or Center for Furniture Craftsmanship or Watershed Ceramics, Center for the Ceramic Arts here in Maine as well. And you have this opportunity to be in a cohort of like-minded individuals who are all learning. And one of the things that's really interesting about the relationship of social media and these places for learning is that they are deeply intergenerational and they are deeply collaborative and non-hierarchical in their learning structures. So there's a lot of sharing and interacting and networking and learning from one another, and you are building connective tissue between artists who might be just down the road or on the other side of the world, and they can then stay in touch through modern communication tools and technologies like social media, and it allows them to extend the experience of being together in the studio into a lifelong connection with others, and becomes an incredible place for sharing ideas and sharing resources and opening doors. You had asked Whitney about how there's a marketplace for craft, and actually we've seen social media become a very interesting way that these artists are able to promote their work as well. You know, they're doing virtual versions of kiln openings, and all of their pots sell out online in a way that used to have to be a completely mediated in-person experience. So one of the things that we are really excited about is that this is a field that's not static, and it's constantly evolving. It's constantly taking new things in. Artists are really good about taking an idea and breaking it and then putting something back together that comes out of it, you know, not accepting the tool as it is given to them. And social media, I think, is just happens to be one of those new ways that our artists are thinking about the way that they interact with each other and the public.
We're talking about craft in Maine on Maine Calling. Already so many of you calling in to add to the conversation. Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. If you've ever admired the shape of a ceramic vase or the lines of a wooden chair, you know what craftsmanship looks like. Today, we're going to learn how Maine craft artists put their skill to work and why Maine has such a long history of craft. My guest, Whitney Gill, a ceramic artist and executive director of the Maine Crafts Association, Matt Hoggle, executive director of the Center for Furniture Craftsmanship, and Perry Price, executive director of the Haystack Mountain School of Crafts. Calling in now, Ayumi Horie, a studio potter from Portland. She won the 2022 Maine Craft Artist Award and was featured in the PBS show Craft in America. Thank you so much for calling in, Ayumi.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Tell us, describe your pottery to us.
I make functional pots. I draw directly into pots and have decals. They're largely inspired by Japanese and American folk tales or just things around us, animals, objects. I even started drawing germs for protest posters around LD 798, which was Maine's vaccine loophole. That was in 2019.
How did
And I've also
you...
used the...
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. Sorry.
I was interested in the conversation about social media because when I graduated from grad school 25 years ago, I started to use the internet right away. I coded my own website, and it's really been my work has really been intertwined with the evolution of the internet.
Oh, so interesting. How do you use social media today?
I think I've actually stepped back from it a bit. It's, you know, I've had the same struggles as many craft artists have about how to balance creating a window into the studio through video and balancing that with just the making itself. And so that's been a bit of a challenge. And I think like a lot of people, I've shifted more toward locals. I used to sell exclusively online. I've shifted more toward local sales and interactions with people as a way to create community, which is something that craft has always been good at.
Ayumi, what is it about Maine? It's the same question I asked my other guests at the beginning of the program, that there are so many people making and selling pottery.
I think that one thing is that if we step back, craft is global, and people have been making things for tens of thousands of years, ever since we could hold rocks and sticks. And so, as Perry talked about, there is that continuum. And in Maine in particular, we have these long, deep traditions. The Wabanaki have this deep, deep knowledge of basketry that continues to unfold. And colonial settlers, to the present day, have had these kind of different kinds of seasonal work. And we've had this history of cottage industries, you know, whether it's like braiding rope or making tinware or making staves or knitting. I think it's really built into our DNA. We also have this legacy of self-sufficiency. You know, you had to keep your farm running. And I think that's also part of it, is this, you know, as Whitney said, this rich natural resource that we've had. So we've had those things in our more distant past, but, you know, more recently, places like Haystack, their history has mirrored the modern studio craft movement, and they do a lot of programming for Mainers. As does Watershed. Watershed has a program for K through 12 art educators. And so I think there's a way in which those organizations are fulcrums or hubs that educate other people, and it just continues to make our craft traditions more robust here.
Ayume, you noticed that you said that a few years ago you were inspired to incorporate germs into your work. I'm wondering what's inspiring you today.
I think that my interest in native plants has a crossover with function in craft. That to me, that is a key piece of my work. And native plants as a way to kind of save our local ecosystems and has been critical. And so some of that imagery has also been working its way into my work, whether it's acorns or milkweed or whatever, but to raise awareness also about that, you know, each square foot of land that a non-native plant is in is a kind of food desert for the pollinators and birds that are around us.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. That was Ayume Horier, who is a potter based in Portland. Before we go to the other calls, though, I want to turn to you, Whitney, because you are also a ceramicist, and I was wondering if you could tell us what is inspiring you today.
Textiles. I think I've been influenced by some of my coworkers who are textile artists who have really been inspiring me with their work. Also, I've been really enjoying learning more about Maine's industrial history. We had major textile mills. Maine Mill actually just opened a museum in Lewiston, celebrating all the industries based in Lewiston. And one of our board members helped install this big, beautiful loom that's a centerpiece in the museum. Just learning about that textile history has really inspired me, and I've tried to emulate those patterns and techniques into my work.
We'll go to Millie, who's calling from Lymington. Hi, Millie. Go ahead.
Hi. I really appreciate you taking my call. I'm the maker at Zwellen Pottery in Lymington and also one of the runners of the Maine Pottery Tour. Maine definitely has a great tradition of pottery and ceramics art. As people have said, we have a lot of natural inspiration. Maine also has clay deposits, and a few of the potters on the tour make their own clay. Last year, the Maine Pottery Tour had 84 participating studios and over 100 potters on the tour. I believe the Maine Pottery Tour is at least one of the biggest in the entire United States. 2027 will be our 15th year. It's always the first weekend in May, which will be May 1st and 2nd. Next year, the tour includes the entire state of Maine, so no matter where you are, there's likely a studio nearby. We have a handy Plan My Tour app on the website that you can use to plan out your trip. Quite a few people travel very far to go on the Maine Pottery Tour. I've had people visit my location from Europe and all over the U.S. It's just a really great community event that celebrates pottery in the state, and you can go to mainepotterytour.org for more information. And yeah, I just also wanted to give a shout out to Whitney Gill Ceramics, which is one of the studios on the tour. So,
yeah, I want to ask you, Millie, what is it that I can understand as someone who might go on a pottery tour, what it is for the customer, what it is for the public to be able to see your studio, but what does it mean for the potter to be able to talk to people who are coming in either with sophisticated or kind of dumb questions about what you do?
No, it's so great. And the pottery tour isn't just about selling pottery. It's about just engaging with the community and showing the process. We have a lot of kiln openings. And I just love having conversations, like, because people will look at our work and be like, I don't know how you did that. And, you know, we just like to, you know, talk to the community. A lot of, like, very new potters like to go on the tour and just, like, see everybody's work, because everybody on the tour is so different. There's so many different techniques that, you know, people have in their ceramics art. And it's really just a fun time to just, you know, talk with the community and just, like, show people what you're doing.
All right, Millie, thank you so much for calling in. Perry, you have special events for people in Maine as well. People, I think, often think of Haystack as a place where people come from all over the world to study, but that's not the whole story, right?
No, that's very true. So we do welcome artists both as participants and as faculty from all over the world, but we do have a number of programs that are aimed specifically to our local community. So that first weekend in May is kind of like when we're all seems like we're thawing out. We have a one-day-long workshop that is just for residents of the region that Haystack is in, so the greater Deer Isle and Blue Hill Peninsula area. And then, as Whitney mentioned, we welcome the Maine Crafts Association to the campus in the spring for a short workshop as well. And then in the fall, we run over Indigenous Peoples Day weekend a short workshop for Maine residents from across the state. And then we also run a number of programs that are for high school age students in the state, both from the local area as well as from across the state, and both in partnerships with local schools, but as well as with organizations that we have deepening partnerships with, like Out Maine. And these programs are meant to provide studio experiences to high school students as a supplement to their other art education that they may have in their own communities. So there's a number of wonderful ways that Haystack tries to encourage makers from across the state to engage with programs, both with, again, with their neighbors, but then, you know, all of those programs all summer long are open to members of the Maine community, and we'd love to have you come down to Deer Isle and do that.
Okay, and Matt, tell us about the programs that you have at Center for Furniture Craftsmanship.
Well, we're certainly very happy to have folks from all over the country and all over the world come to the center. We also support the local community and have our gallery, the Messler Gallery, where we have four exhibitions every year for both residents and visitors to the Midcoast to come see the finest wood furniture and furnishings that we can bring in, both from Maine and around the country and around the world. Like Perry, we're excited to have people from Maine and beyond come and take our classes and our longer-term professional track workshops and programs as well. And we've just recently purchased a building where we're going to be setting up a group of faculty and alumni shop to support makers who want to be career furniture makers and need space to do it here in the Midcoast, because one of the real problems that's happened across virtually all art and craft mediums in recent decades is the loss of space to make work, especially when it's really tool or machine heavy. And so we're trying the best we can to sort of support those who need that space. Woodworking in particular is a rather expensive endeavor to take on. And so we were doing what we can to kind of make it a little bit easier for folks who want to live and work here in the Midcoast.
Oh, interesting. When will this open? You said you just bought the building. What's your plan? What's the timeline? Yeah.
Well, it was sort of a purchase of opportunity, unplanned and unbudgeted. So we're working it out right now. We have some renovations going on. If you're familiar with the Midcoast, it was the Habitat Restore building in Rockport. They recently moved to another building. And so we are undergoing, I was saying end of summer. I'm no longer saying end of summer. I'm saying by the end of the year, we hope to be up and running, because I want to under promise
but, and get but there. What a terrific idea. So you're going to have some of the tools that woodworkers use but are really expensive to buy, and give them access to come in and have a shared space.
Yeah, setting up a machine room, for example, where you're going to have, you know, joiners and planers and table saws and all the other things that go into professional grade woodworking is many dozens of thousands, if not $100,000 or more of an investment to get a professional shop running. And obviously makers, woodworkers who are just coming out of programs like ours find that difficult by and large. We have a 9-month comprehensive program, which is really focused on people who want to be professional woodworkers. We have some shorter 12-week programs similar that do the similar things. And so one thing we're thinking a lot about is what is our, if not obligation, responsibility to those woodworkers coming out of programs like ours to try and make it an easier road to become professionals and set up a career.
We'll go to Tomasis, who's calling from Swan's Island. Hi, go ahead.
Hello, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. My family has built a company called Bath & Wood of Maine, and we create custom handcrafted wooden bathtubs for both residential and hospitality settings. Each bathtub that we design and build is completely custom. Really, our goal was to create a beautiful piece that people could have in their homes that really felt like their own. The idea that this entire concept sparked from was my father built a beautiful wooden sailing boat. And we sat around our kitchen table one night talking about if we can keep the water out, we can keep the water in. So we came up with this design where we built these beautiful bathtubs that would keep the warm water in, and the wood really encourages that aspect of wellness and really peace. So that is what we do. And we have a website called Bath & Wood of Maine, and we have built tubs for hotels. We have built tubs for celebrities. And we really just embrace the local community that we live in on Swan's Island that has built these boats that are so stunning. And that's really where the motivation and the inspiration came from.
Well, thanks so much for calling in, Tomasis, and good luck. Matt, an example of what we were talking about before, innovation.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, not to keep selling what we do, but one of the great things we have is the fellowship program where we're bringing in folks from around the world to spend, you know, a month to a year or more. And one of the most impressive, and we don't ask any specific thing of them. Some come to make a piece of furniture. Some come to just really investigate the medium more and find out what else you can do with wood in a way that hasn't really been done before. And it's amazing thing to watch, you know, and its processes and new techniques develop in a place like that. We've got typically 6 or 7 woodworkers working together. As Perry was referencing earlier in the conversation, woodworking, like many crafts, is often a solitary endeavor. And so providing those spaces for people to work together, bounce ideas off of one another, learn from one another is something that all of these organizations are contributing to, and really vital to enriching the craft culture in Maine and also continuing and expanding.
Tomasis, thanks for calling. We're going to go now to Tim McCrate. Tim is an artist, he's an author, he's a teacher, and he's known for his many books about metalsmithing and jewelry making. Thanks so much for calling in, Tim.
Oh, well, thanks for the invitation. Nice to talk with you, Jennifer.
How did you get started with metalsmithing?
In college, well, actually, even back last year of high school, another student had taken a summer class, a summer program, where he learned to make jewelry, and he bought some equipment. His parents wouldn't let him keep it at home, so he asked the art teacher if he could bring it into the art room at high school. And I looked over his shoulder, and I saw him saw something out, and I said, "That's cool." And when I got to college, I took a lot of other things and kind of treated myself by making jewelry in my dorm room, just as a kind of a gift for, you know, a change of pace from the academic courses. And in the end, I spent more time making jewelry than anything else. So that's what I do.
I love that it all started in a classroom, because you spent so much of your life in the future. In the future, you would go to be that teacher who provided that class for others.
That's pretty much the way I learn. I just find that I process information in my head and it comes out. So explaining something, I basically am explaining it to myself anyway, whatever it is I'm thinking about. So just letting it come out of my mouth instead of stay in my brain, that's teaching.
So describe the textbooks you've written. Is this your way of preserving your craft for the future?
Well, that makes it sound pretty glorious. Sure, let's go with it was more, I went to graduate school and turned out that was not the right move. I should have gone to an art college, but in graduate school, they said, okay, here's a studio and good luck. And so I to this day, haven't taken a class. I've taught my whole career and I really enjoyed it, but I always looking for more information. And it turned out that research was a good way for me to actually make a book, so I could justify the time. And so writing books continues to be teaching. It's another form of teaching and a way of training myself.
Tim, what does Maine's craft community mean to you personally?
Well, so much warmth, support, inspiration. It's been talked about already. There's this sense of belonging. There's a very non-judgmental sense, I think, a welcoming sense. That you see this at Haystack and any of the other schools. You show up and there's no question about what do you know, or you know, how did you qualify to get here? Nothing like that. You walk in the door, and if you're curious, you're welcome. And I think that applies across the whole field to beginners and from professionals, sharing what they know with each other and continuing that tradition.
Well, Tim, for the record, all three of my guests were nodding as you said that. So that warmth, that feeling of warmth is being reflected right back at you. Thanks so much for calling. Tim McGrate, an artist, educator, and author specializing in metalsmithing. We are going to take another quick break. Would you like to join the conversation? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainpublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Craft includes handmade objects and art of all kinds. We are talking about the people who make these creations and the strong craft community here in Maine. Joining me, Matt Hoggle with the Center for Furniture Craftsmanship, Perry Price with Haystack Mountain School of Crafts, and Whitney Gill with Maine Crafts Association. Share your comments and questions. You can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. On the line now is Ashley Page, who is an interdisciplinary artist, sculptor, teacher, and also studio and programs manager at the Indigo Arts Alliance. Thanks so much for calling in, Ashley.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me.
Tell me about the materials and media you use in your work.
Yeah, well, my work is, I sort of call or refer to it as sort of a hybrid craft approach with a sculptural sensibility, in the sense that my work is primarily made out of paper, handmade paper and paper pulp, in addition to wire forms and fiber and textile work as well. And so that's really sort of what it's comprised of. But for me, my approach to craft is definitely something that I consider to be a storytelling element, and sort of this regeneration of lineage and legacy being carried through a series of hands over time. And so, my hands just tend to really love making paper and wire sculptures.
Is there a main craft tradition or community that you feel a part of or inspired by?
I think definitely. I mean, speaking from the sort of institutional lens of knowing how well in community we are, and understanding Maine's history of an incredible craft legacy, we have, you know, the Maine Indian Basket Alliance led by Teresa Secord. So really even thinking about sort of Maine's traditional craft sort of environment. And legacy, but then also in a more contemporary and current context too, with the sort of newer organizations, Maine Crafts Association, Indigo Arts Alliance, Haystack, thinking about how we build upon those legacies and also the ways in which they can continue to sort of be seen through a contemporary lens as well. It's definitely, I say, a strong through line of Maine's sort of creative identity is craft. But then also, in terms of the sort of artist community, Tim McCrate was just on talking about the sort of warmth of the craft community. And that's definitely something that I can attest to. I don't think I've ever been a part of a craft room or an environment that was centered around craft that didn't feel welcoming and curious also. So that's always, I think, is a sort of signature mark that I think Maine has been able to hold for time immemorial.
Ashley, I'm going to turn to Whitney Gill for just a second. Hi, Whitney. Go ahead.
Hi. Ashley also did our craft apprentice program a few years ago, too, with mentor Alyssa Hunter. I just want to shout out how inspiring their apprenticeship was. That's how we got to know Ashley. And just two really unique artists working in paper and using it in completely different ways. But I've loved watching their relationship continue and their bodies of work just grow and change in unique ways. You can tell that they feed each other, but also just have these super unique and beautiful voices and bodies of work.
Ashley, I want to ask you about the programs at Indigo Arts Alliance. Who do they serve?
Yeah, our events organization as a whole, our residency programs, our curatorial projects, our symposiums, they are specifically, we always say, act locally, think globally. So we definitely consider ourselves to be an international organization, but our residencies specifically serve Black and Brown artists from all across the world. But we use that as a way to leverage local community and to say, when we serve one, we serve all. And so all of our programs are open to the public. And so we consider, the audience to be everybody who is interested and wants to engage.
Ashley, thank you so much for calling us. Ashley Page, an interdisciplinary artist and craftsperson who works with Indigo Arts Alliance. Let's see, we'll go to Phil, who's calling from Biddeford. Hi, Phil, go ahead.
Hi, good morning, Jennifer. Phil Huzzy. I have the fortune of leading the team at Thomas Mosher up here in Auburn, Maine.
And oh.
I want to thank Matt because we are tremendously grateful for Matt's leadership and have been lucky enough to hire some graduates from the center as well over the years, including a recent one in the last couple months.
Well, that's, it's interesting you called because Matt talking about all the people that are trained at the Center for Furniture Craftsmanship. I know from hosting Maine Calling how many professions in Maine are suffering a shortage of qualified workers, and I can only imagine with the skill level that you need, Phil, that's sort of magnified. Do you find that there are enough fine woodworkers out there?
We're lucky in the sense that we have a tremendous team of makers in Auburn who've been with us for decades. Most times, I think it's a third of our workforce is over 25 years of tenure with us, which is rare in sort of the wider picture, but I suppose not in Maine. Our challenge is making sure that we're able to continue that pipeline of talent. But we're lucky that there are people like Matt and the North Bennett Street School in Boston that believe in the power of making stuff by hand, and we're able to partner with folks like that.
Matt, anything you'd like to add?
Well, I just want to say thank you to Phil, because if it wasn't for Thomas Mosher Furniture, CFC may not have ended up in Maine. I mean, Thomas Mosher was the more or less the introduction of the studio furniture movement to Maine, and resulted in so many furniture makers either moving here or starting their practice here, which I'm quite sure influenced the CFC, Center for Furniture Craftsmanship's founder, Peter Korn, when he decided to set up the school here in the early 90s. So it's a wonderfully mutually beneficial relationship. And I do know who just got hired down there, and I'm no doubt it's going to be a great experience for the company and for him.
Phil, congratulations, and thanks for calling in. Let's see, we'll go to Hunter calling from Scarborough. Hi, Hunter, go ahead.
Hey, yeah, just to touch base on, we've been talking a lot about community and specifically in the woodworking space. I'm a professional woodworker in Scarborough. I actually am an alumni of CFC. I was able to get a scholarship 6 years ago to attend some classes there, and that really kicked off my journey in woodworking. Here we are 6 years later, and I love the community of craftsmanship and people in Maine. It's such a strong community, and that sparked last year me starting the Maine Woodworking Event, which is a gathering of woodworkers in the Maine area that just get together. We have presentations where you can learn. We have vendors coming with tool companies, and it's just a wonderful event where people with a passion for woodworking can come and get community. And we're coming up right on our second year this year. We've grown quite a bit. We've extended it to 2 days. We have 30 vendors, and it's on August 8th and 9th right in Scarborough.
Ah, well, congratulations, Hunter, and thank you for calling in. We have an email here from Bruce. My wife has knitted since she was a girl. She knits gorgeous things we all wear, so we're steeped in the crafts mentality. We moved to Litchfield a few years back, and I discovered the Maine craft store at the Gardner Rest Stop. I shop there every Christmas for birthdays and for gifts when we travel to stay with friends, some of whom used to live in Maine and greatly value craft gifts from Maine. The store has some regular objects, but also always brings in new items. It is a, and this is in all caps, it is a must shop location for quality Maine crafts. Wendy, how long has the shop been there? And can you give us some sense of what that has meant for Maine's craft community?
Sure. Wow. Thanks for that testimony. The craft store has been there since 2008. The travel plazas were actually in the process of being renovated, and we had the opportunity to build a center for Maine craft into that West Gardner Service Plaza. And it stemmed from the need of having a year-round resource for sales for artists, representation for craft in the state. And it has been incredibly beneficial. We have run, we usually have about 300 artists that represent their work in that space. And we also have an exhibition space. We usually do about 6 exhibitions per year, both individual and group shows. We're open 7 days a week, 9 to 6. And we also just launched an e-commerce store a few years ago. So we very proudly represent some incredible artists who live and work in Maine in that store.
We'll go to Jenny calling from Clinton. Hi, Jenny, go ahead.
Hi, I'm a dairy farmer, and I just was listening to the show, and I was thinking about how I needed to express gratitude for all the folks who are involved in crafts and arts in Maine, because, you know, my world is very utilitarian, and while I can appreciate the artistry of good handmade and or good crafted tools and such, our world is so much better because we have people who choose to pour their creativity and their passion and commitment and their hard work and sweat equity into crafts and arts and keep it here in Maine. And someone had said earlier about, you know, thinking locally, but also thinking globally. And that's so important. And it's just a real microcosm of Maine. I can feed my neighbors, but I can still be mindful of the world. And I just am very appreciative. So thank you so much to everybody and for the show.
Well, Jenny, it had occurred to me at some point during this program that I don't think there's, it's a complete coincidence that the Back to the Land movement and the growth of the studio craft movement are kind of hand in hand. And I'm wondering if you agree with that.
And I was thinking that, you know, my world is completely utilitarian, but then I look at the beautiful hand-turned furniture that someone would craft at home from a homestead, or we look at barn quilts, or we look at just the artwork every year that is so important for the T-shirts and the tote bags and the posters for the Common Ground Fair. I mean, it just all blends together. And I just think that it's part and parcel. I can't do what I need to do without a craftsman who's making sure that I have the tools necessary to do it. And I couldn't be the happy farmer that I am if I didn't have art to fill my life. So without one, I don't have the other. So
Well, Jenny, thanks so much for calling in. Just a few seconds left, Perry. In this big year that is going on at Haystack, the 75th anniversary, what's coming up that you'd like to highlight?
Well, you know, when we were talking about our main programming, the thing that I had forgotten to mention is that if you're interested in seeing what we do at Haystack, we have an open house this August 8th. So there's an opportunity to come to the school and to see all the various studios in action. We'll have artists and craftspeople from all over our community doing demonstrations. And so you'll be able to see how the institution is activated and learn more about their other programs that we have. And then we have a number of really accomplished speakers who will be coming back to Haystack and joining us. And all of those calendar of events can be found on our website.
Well, thank you all for joining us. The voice you just heard, Perry Price, Executive Director of the Haystack Mountain School of Crafts, celebrating its 75th year. Whitney Gill, a ceramic artist and Executive Director of the Maine Crafts Association, and Matt Hoggle, Executive Director of the Center for Furniture Craftsmanship. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we talk with Maine filmmakers about their work. Many of them will be featured at the Maine International Film Festival starting tomorrow. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Public Radio.